Blog Talk Radio.
Of a free government
owes not only a proportion of his property, but even of his personal service to the defense of it, it is unimaginable that he would see current administrations as the embodiment of a free government, or that citizens have a moral obligation to defend an aggressive, interventionist imperia that is endangering the survival of the entire planet. Honest conservatives reject neoconservatism as a perversion of true national interest. The irony that an internationalist like Teddy Roosevelt would be lionized as a great patriot is attributed to his strong persona. While ignoring the consequences of his entanglement policies, his carrying of a big stick set the stage for the 21st century of using a blunt club.
What exactly is patriotic about sending generations of youth to be used as cannon fodder for the sole purpose and benefit of global elites who really rule our country? When Teddy Roosevelt says patriotism means to stand by the country, has become a meaningless viewpoint since the control of the government is in the foreign hands that have destroyed all semblance of what once existed as our country.
Public polls always provide higher support for the president than for the legislators in Congress. Because of no small measure, the House and the Senate have abdicated their constitutional duties in foreign policy since the Korean War, leaving to the executive branch the full weight of determining relations with foreign nations, has allowed the decisive influence to be concentrated in the State Department establishment, while the military-industrial security complex and the intelligent community agencies are the dominant power behind the globalist policy. The treasonous elites and foreign banksters who control the strings are the only benefactors after the body count is compiled.
And under this set of circumstances, what actual duty does a loyal American have to do the bidding of a corrupt and illegitimate government? Do you believe that George Washington fought the revolution to allow the city of London to rule over the foreign policies of our country? Even though the last two centuries have decidedly been influenced, if not totally compromised, by foreign agents, especially those among the Rothschild central banking cabal, the final responsibility for the loss of our country lies with the American people.
Americans have seldom exemplified a burning desire to understand the truth. Most are content to believe that their leaders are good men and women and have the best interests of their nation as the goal. The fact that such a myth bears little resemblance with reality never gets through to the flag-flying households that proudly display their love it or leave it bumper stickers. They are uncritical, and all-consuming patriotism is a false and destructive sentiment. By allowing the mass media manipulation and distorted historical lessons to be accepted as mainstream culture, the forces of global dominance are able to achieve their worldwide governance.
Now this assessment is disturbing to many people, and bearer of the message risks becoming ostracized for a polite society. Yet such a reaction does not refute the accuracy of the argument. What can or should a responsible citizen do to prevent the systematic betrayal of our country and the event, and even more important, what can be done to stop the madness of NATO's belligerency? The Russian Federation under Putin is not the same threat of the Soviet Union of Lenin or Stalin.
The practice of civil disobedience is most closely associated with fringe or radical dissenters. Ever since the demonstrations of burning draft cards and wearing the stars and stripes as a bandana of the Vietnam era, the silent and moral majority became distrustful of protest. Nevertheless, the public display of discontent has influenced the body politic more than voting between the bipartisan clones of the same established order. Every rational person instinctively understands that money interests exert the primary influence over public policy. Laws are administered and enforced according to the legal judiciary that operates, not as an arbitrator or as an adjudicator for justice, but as a protector of the patrician system.
Defiance has a charm about the image that movies exemplify. but little support when it comes down to popular engagement. The Henry David Thoreau of philosophy may be discussed in conversation, but is seldom practiced in ordinary life decisions. And people have surrendered their courage to confront class governmental abuses. As the docility of personality becomes the normal standard for the political correct culture, government is emboldened by to discard this public opinion that differs with official policy. And taking to the streets is seen in Europe frequently, even if not reported on the nightly news. In the Brian Williams version of embellishment, the civilian receptor of perpetual war propaganda is blinded by the non-news in order to accept the phony narrative. As the latest Wag the Dog episode of this year's War on Terror play for the crowd, the ISIL ministries get overshadowed in the ratings with the Ukraine designer conflict.
Those who believe the siren sounds from the triplets, John Paskey, Marie Harf, and big neocon mama, Victoria Nuland, over at the State Department, are the most pathetic patriot imposters imaginable. Lost in the spin is that the State Department was an eager participant behind the Ukraine coup d'etat. However, public apathy persists that the notion of spontaneous civil disobedience combustion is totally absent from public consciousness. With the susceptibility of stimulated patriotic appeals, the swayable dullards will demand retaliation after the next cover-up deception is triggered.
In a social order where it is impossible to throw out the bums, an election and courts will not follow this constitution, the lonely protester has few options. Civil disobedience may not be popular in a psychologically induced environment, but denial is never a positive choice when tyranny in the government in the official mode of rule. And with the announcement that Israel's Benjamin Netanyahu March 3rd speech to Congress, the states are dramatically raised to eliminate Syria and Iran as a threat to the greater Zionist state, and worse yet, to marginalize Russia and demonize Putin as a devil incarnate. When the media cheerleaders do their usual genuflections for Bibi's call to arms, the rest of us are being used as bargaining chips to force a total capitulation or face nuclear destruction. If this is not an overwhelming reason to call for our own government to stand down, what would be? Threats from Israel that they will use their nukes against anyone who defies their demands illustrates who the real belligerent is in the region.
I think we ought to check and see if we have a call.
Yeah,
we're just
going
to check and see
But it's really true what this guy's talking about. And you have to call the name.
Okay.
These are times.
These are times for sober reflection. Dispel the manufactured and false flag crises and concentrate on the bona fide threats that reside within our own shores. Fifth column subversives have assumed key positions within the government. Their loyalty to causes of countries other than their own is a core factor in the insecurity that prevails. If civil disobedience is not your cup of tea, start digging your bomb shelter. The odds that our congressional representatives will grow a backbone are remote. Presidents view themselves as the most powerful and supreme leader of a world as opposed to an American servant. Dissent is the true patriotism when it's focused on eliminating despotism and restoring our fallen policy in keeping with George Washington's farewell address. If you really love your country, put an end to the gunboat or martyrs of the TR mentality and follow the lead of the father of your country. Americans need to mature and grow up. The dangerous world we live in was created largely because of the militarized intervention of the imperial U.S. empire. Drawing lines in the sands of the Middle East is only superseded in pushing Russia to accept Ukraine to become a NATO member.
So you can go to this on BATR.org or go right to IntelHub.com. Okay? So
quite a good article.
Yeah, that was a good article. And I totally agree with him.
And
I forget who that was written by. It doesn't say. But it was
Maybe a staff writer.
Yeah, probably a staff writer.
A lot to think about there, and you ought to go to the article and maybe reread it. I think that's an article that you should really reread, to make sure you absorb all of it.
Our guest, like I said tonight, is with us and just joined us. His name is David Eisenstein, and he is the founder of the Monster Super Pack. You can check it out on Monster
Pack.
Yeah, MONSTAH Pack, PAC.com. And we'll go right to that and see how he is here. Good evening, David. How are you?
Good evening, Leo. I'm doing well.
I have my co-host with me here is Lila, and she says hello as well.
Hi, David.
Hello, Lila. Nice to
thank you for coming on the show. I took a look at your website, and you have an ambitious agenda.
Yeah, it's pretty ambitious. I agree. And we want to fulfill our basically our platform that we have set forth on our website, and that's going to take a lot of work, and we're having some fun with it, as you can imagine, with a name like Monster Pack, but it's not all fun.
Lyle and I were grabbed immediately by your interest in nuclear power and trying to ban these things from the face of the earth. Nuclear sites.
And my question about that is, do you have a plan in order to do that? One of the things that we found here in Connecticut when we had friends who were very involved in the anti-nuclear movement was that they had considerable difficulty with the appointed people, people that were appointed to nuclear regulatory commissions, who were not elected, who had an enormous amount of power, and who were usually people who had ties to the military, nuclear subs, or to nuclear power, or to nuclear power in some way.
And also the complacency of the Department of Utility control.
Right. The regulatory people are asleep at the switch as far as we're concerned. Well, we really have bitten off a piece of the nuclear issue, not the whole chimichanga. The nuclear issue that we are directly facing, which is still an existential issue here in our area, which is Southern California, is San Onofre is shuttered. It's shut down. It's being decommissioned as we speak. But and so it's not operating at this time. But the nuclear waste that it created over the years is still on site. It's right there, right next to the generating station, and it is going to be unsafely stored at the site for the next 100 years, according to the best estimates that we can come up with in terms of what the Nuclear Regulatory Commission has in mind for the storage of nuclear waste, since there is no safe storage of nuclear waste in this country. We're concerned that nuclear waste is still being created by those facilities that are still operating. But I'm glad that you agree, and I think I'm very thankful for what work you guys and your people working with you there have done in the past these many years. But we want to have the nuclear waste moved out of Southern California. We have 20 million people within a 50-mile radius, just as you have a very heavily populated area up there. We have a very heavily populated in Southern California, as you know. And, San Clemente is within 2 miles of this nuclear waste. And they want to put it in a 5/8-inch steel drum, quite a few of those, and bury them in concrete in the sand right above the ocean, right above the beach. And that's all that's standing between us and the nuclear havoc and Holocaust even. If there should be an earthquake that unleashes the fury of this nuclear waste, and also, earthquakes can cause tsunamis, and we know what happened when Fukushima had the tsunami that unleashed the fury of the nuclear waste and the nuclear operating system there on the coast. So we don't want that to happen to our coast, our families, any of the people that are within this radius. And we want this waste moved out. And there are activists that are busily trying to get that accomplished. And we're hopeful and that we can do our part to help as well.
Where
were you thinking of moving it out to?
Well, that is the $64,000 question, and that is there are no options at this time to move it to a safe facility. Yucca Mountain is not available in Nevada. The New Mexico facility that was storing nuclear waste had a plutonium leak, and it's being cleaned up. But it's not available. So there is really no place available, and that's the problem. That's what the Nuclear Regulatory Commission should be absolutely working nonstop to solve. And our federal representatives, such as Daryl Issa, whom we have campaigned against the last two cycles, and we're going to campaign against him again in the 2016 cycle should he decide to run for re-election, has completely turned a blind eye to the situation. He's turned his back on the San Onofre facility for years and the cleanup of the nuclear waste there.
So he has no comments about this or no?
He doesn't even debate when he runs for re-election. He doesn't even deign to debate his opponent, which, you know, are substantial people running against him, and he doesn't debate him because he's got a large edge of Republican registration, although that's shrinking.
Well, you know, one of the phenomenal things that I noticed is that nobody's talking about nuclear power at all. All right. In fact,
I think relatively speaking, you're right. I think it's a silent, deadly issue right now.
Obama just funded, or I don't know if it got approved, but because I haven't heard anything more about it. But he was funding a nuclear power plant somewhere in this country. They wanted to build a new one. And that freaked me out when I saw that, because they haven't built one since the 70s, right? And the other problem that I noticed is that nobody is talking about it on any platforms. I just Elizabeth Warren just came out with her seven big items that she I don't know if you heard about that or not.
I have not seen it. No.
Yeah, I mean it's a farce from farce land, you know.
That's too bad.
I was impressed with her at one time, but you know now no, she just surprised me that there was no mention at all of anything to do with nuclear power or energy or anything at all. Most of what she was standing around, it was some kind of a resolution for the middle class, okay, to strengthen the middle class, right? But at the same time, this is what she's going for. This seems to be what she's pushing, okay?
I guess we can always hope that will evolve. You know, it is a huge issue. It should be, and I mean, it's totally an existential issue. I mean, I just ask the people of Japan. Well, no, don't ask them because they become in the final stages of denial, I think, on this issue. They completely don't acknowledge it anymore, you know, so they're not the people to ask either. I hope that we're not getting to that point in this country.
Your nuclear waste is being stored on site, you said, right now. And how does the storage of that nuclear waste compare to how it's being stored in other parts of the world?
Great question, Lila. And listen, that's really our only, our only realistic hope at the moment is to have it shipped out in 20-inch thick containers that the Europeans are using now. And that is more expensive than a 5/8-inch thick steel container that Edison, which is the private proprietor of this generating station, which is shuttered, but they're still on the job, so to speak, with this decommissioning that's going to conceivably go on for 20 years that they're still getting paid for. and they're still getting profits out of this deal that they can share with their shareholders. So we are hopeful that they will be forced by the Nuclear Regulatory Commission to go to change their plan. The current plan is a 5/8-inch steel thickness, and that is not enough. That's not enough to protect us. That's all we've got between us and nuclear holocaust around here. To go to the 20-inch steel and ship this out and store it someplace that's, you know, not in the middle of 20 million people.
I have to ask you, not to get off the nuclear subject totally, but what's the matter, Lila?
Well, you got another question?
Go ahead.
What I want to get at is how can you affect the drafting of a policy that would create change? That's what I am interested in.
Well, the way that a registered PAC such as ours, we are a super PAC registered with the Federal Election Commission. The way that we can do it is by supporting candidates for Congress who support this concept of safe disposal of nuclear waste, and you know that can put pressure on the Nuclear Regulatory Commission to do so, and also, you know, of course, you know, although we are a Federal Election Commission super PAC, you know, registered with that agency, and we're not currently authorized to participate in state elections, we certainly acknowledge that there's some things that can be done by the state regulatory people to make things change. But mostly it's a federal issue at this point in terms of let's come up with a place that can more safely, they won't ever, I mean, I don't know about ever, but right now there's no safe storage of nuclear waste. But there should be a safer place than right on the coast of California within 50 miles of 20 million people.
That's very scary. And it's scary to live near any kind of nuclear plant.
Of course it is. And we acknowledge that, too. Mustapac is not just interested and concerned about San Onofre. We're concerned about Diablo Canyon up north in San Luis Obispo, which is not too far from L.A. and not too far from even San Francisco, actually. But, you know, there's other nuclear facilities in your area and all over the country that are in bad shape and crying out for help in terms of fixes and shutting them down and disposing of the waste safely. I mean, this is a big problem in this country, and you're right. Not enough is being reported on it. Not enough is being discussed in the public sphere.
I'd like to just change the subject for a minute because I don't see what is your attitude and toward the climate changing, and what do you believe the causes of it are, and what do you believe in what's happening with the geoengineering, does your PAC is your PAC willing to fight this cause that's been going on seemingly for the last 20 years?
Absolutely. Yeah, we're not only willing, it's in our platform of issues that we are very, very much concerned about and married to in terms of trying to come up with solutions and people that can, you know, in Congress that can help make legislation that would help resolve some of these dilemmas that we as a nation face in terms of the future that we will have with the climate change. It's ongoing. It's here. It's not something that's going to happen in the future. It's already happening, and whether it's man-made or human-caused is, of course, not really the issue, except for what we can do to mitigate continuing to create that problem through through the expelling of carbon dioxide into the atmosphere by numerous causes in this country and elsewhere.
Well, it's that,
but we've got already a climate change that's ongoing that we have to, you know, plan for and make changes for.
But what I'm getting at is that nobody in power will admit to the chemtrailing of the skies, the geoengineering of our atmosphere, you know, which is causing a lot of it. No, they didn't. they really did. They said there's chemtrails, but you know they never they've gone against it. But there's evidence, so much evidence to point to what's going on out there. We've seen it for the last 15 years in this area, and in California, it's definitely there. If you see all the groups that have started up, California Sky Watch, New York Sky Watch, Connecticut Sky Watch, all of these franchised groups that are, and I say franchise, they're not franchises, but they're offshoots, of all these different Sky Watch groups that are on the internet that are looking and taking pictures and evidence of the insane chemtrailing in our skies and geoengineering. In fact, geoengineering.com is a very, very popular site by Dane Whittington. And he's out there in California as well, fighting like hell, doing public speaking and so on, and paying attention to what's happening in the skies. But there doesn't seem to be any public,
the public is sleeping on this issue, really, and it is. I'm sorry. Go ahead.
No, but what's happening is a lot of the they're contributing now a lot of our immunodeficiency diseases to the constant to the plague of chemtrails. All right, that are dropping pathogens in the air. Global dimming basically is what they're creating. And the lack of vitamin D. Most of what we're saying now is caused by climate change. It's not so much the human emissions of carbon dioxide in the air. What it is it's the global dimming. Okay, caused by this massive international, massive international military involvement of chemtrailing the skies, all right, with barium and aluminum oxide, which is a very, very well known. These things are falling out of the skies all the time. You're seeing tremendous increases in Alzheimer's. Tremendous increases of diseases that are actually caused by the ingestion of aluminum, all right, and these are things that are happening everywhere, but yet nobody but activists, all right, and nobody but people that are out there daily trying to stop this stuff are aware of it, or bringing the awareness. And there's nothing there's nobody nationally or in any media, okay, other than alternative, all right, which is marginalized, that is talking about this stuff. And I would hope that your PAC would be, involved with that as well, more so.
Let me tell you a couple of things that have happened that you may be aware of that make this a very steep hill to climb. In May and June of last year, the Coal State Representative Federal Congressman David McKinley, Republican from West Virginia, submitted an amendment to the House 2015 Department of Defense Appropriations Act and the 2015 National Defense Authorization Bill, and both amendments were passed on a highly partisan GOP vote. And the amendment said none of the funds made available by this act, can be used to design, implement, administer, or carry out the U.S. Global Climate Research Program, National Climate Assessment, the Intergovernmental Panel on Climate Change's Fifth Assessment Report, the United Nations Agenda 21 Sustainable Development Plan, or the May 2013 Technical Update of the Social Cost of Carbon for Regulatory Impact Analysis under Executive Order 12866. So Congress is actively subverting our domestic tranquility of our country by passing these kinds of, basically amendments to the appropriations bills that the military even needs. And, as a result of that, the hands are tied of the military to research this. And that's just that's just the tip of the iceberg in terms of what Congress is doing. We've got the chairman of the Senate Committee on Environment, Senator Imhoff from Oklahoma, who's a climate change denier of the first order. And, you know, how can, you know, it's very difficult for the public to do anything about this when you've got these guys in control of Congress who are actively subverting our national well-being, our national defense, and by forcing our military to stick their heads in the sand as deniers, like deniers. So I see the problem that you're talking about, and I think it is really, really close to being treasonous, if not actively treason, for the Congress of the United States to tell our military they can't even look into science to help them to determine how to prevent, you know, making a contribution to this climate change and accelerating it by their behavior. So, yeah, it's a big problem.
Oh, boy.
I was curious also, since they I forgot the name of the number of the proposition that you had out in California to ban GMOs, or to label GMOs, I should say.
Yeah.
That didn't
pass, as you know.
No, and I'm wondering if that's still a viable movement, or
I think it is. I think people who know about GMOs don't like them, and you know, there's a lot of apathy, Fleo. It's as you know. I mean, you've got the big money food companies that are, you know, they've got a big time vested interest, billions of dollars invested into their, you know, their funny foods, and you know, it's just really, again, it's a tough issue for the public to, number one, wrap their brain around, but also to get involved in, because the opposition is just so powerful and seemingly monolithic.
Yeah, but it's the ultimate hypocrisy, that the overwhelming hypocrisy of the Obama administration. To have the director of the FDA as a former Monsanto vice president and lobbyist, and to have Michelle Obama, you know, sponsoring this huge organic vegetable, eat your broccoli, you know, craziness in the schools, all right? When her, the whole administration is sponsoring GMOs. You know?
Wow. Yeah, you know, that really brings it into direct contrast. It's thank you for that. I mean, that is, you're right. It is hypocritical and it's destructive. I mean, it's one thing to have Monsanto out there doing everything it can on behalf of the food industry to continue with the GMOs. It's another thing for the Obama administration to basically bring in a person who has been a part of that for so long and that's so powerful in that industry.
But
that's the problem. The problem is with a lot of these appointees who have tremendous power, and that's what happens in the regulatory commissions. You got these people that are appointed that are owed. The elected person owes them, so they put them in these positions of power. And right now, it seems from your website that you're tackling Daryl Issa to remove him from office by putting up a good candidate?
Do you have one yet?
No, we are searching and we are talking to people, and there are some possibly legitimate candidates out there. I mean, it's a district full of really, you know, there's a lot of smart people everywhere in this country, and you know, people that are able and. And I don't have any concern that we won't find a good candidate. What I'm concerned about is that we need to be able to support that person in the way that can make that candidate a winner over Issa and his big money that he's got behind him, and incumbency and the Republican edge in this district, which is shrinking.
How do you feel about presidential candidate Jim Webb?
You know, I'm not as familiar with Jim Webb as I probably should be. I haven't got my head into the presidential race yet. Probably should have been by now, but it's not a race that we're involved in as a PAC. But at the same time, of course, it's important to all of us. And maybe you could tell me a little bit more about Jim Webb.
Won't you be involved with the presidential race?
Well, we may not be involved in the presidential race because we're going to have our hands full with districts where Congress people can be elected that could make a big difference. And there's a lot of emphasis on the presidential races, which is very important. But, you know, we really obviously can't do everything, and we want to be good at what we do. And so, yeah, you know, it's possible that we won't be actively involved in the presidential race in this cycle.
So are you going to concentrate on one race or more than one?
We're going to have more than one race in our focus, and we already are thinking about the races that we can make a difference in, and we've got some races, some districts in mind that are in addition to District 49 of California, which is ICE's district.
How many friendly representatives to this issue do you think you would need in order to make a change?
A lot, and that's the thing. You know, and we're hoping for a progressive wave during the presidential election because that should bring out more voters than the last cycle. In 2014 general election, and if that happens, then there'll be a chance that the close districts can go progressive, go Democrat, perhaps, or independent, even, you know, and maybe even good Republicans could get in if they have the right ideas in mind and deserve support. It's not likely, but that could happen. Some people who are Republicans sure would agree that they need more candidates that are open minded to these issues.
Yeah, but wouldn't it scare you to death to have like a Rand Paul or a Jeb Bush, all right, or God forbid a Ted Cruz or some other complete moron, all right, running for Republican?
Personally, yes, it scares me to think of that, but Mazdapak is not focused on the presidential race, not at this time, and I don't expect that we will be during this cycle, but I'm certainly concerned about who the next president's going to be.
I think it's wise to narrow your focus so that you can affect some kind of change. I mean, you have to pick, you know, whatever it is, the issue that you think is most important, and focus on that for the next election cycle. And it sounds like you have some people picked out that maybe are vulnerable and could help this cause in Congress.
That's what we're working on. Absolutely. You got it. You nailed it.
The issue that I was interested in that you brought up was remanufacturing.
That's a big issue that this country needs to care more about. And we have the potential for more jobs and better environmental effects of remanufacturing of heavy metal equipment such as tractors and automobiles. We can increase that many times fold. And we want Congress people who are elected, our representatives, our federal representatives to Congress, we want to be open-minded to that and actively pro remanufacturing.
Do you think that would be something that unions would be very interested in because it would create jobs?
It should be, and I'm sure there will be that interest created once it becomes more prominent on the radar screen. I would expect unions to push for remanufacturing because it will create more jobs.
I think that's an important thing. Certainly, we're looking for jobs in this country.
Talking about jobs, what is your opinion about the Trans-Pacific Treaty, and how do you feel about our foreign policy regarding not only trade but?
Well, what I'm worried about is the environmental policies of our country. Any that we do have are going to be severely impacted by the TPP.
Yeah, I mean, we don't want to see it become China, you know. But what does your party? I mean, obviously, it probably does.
We haven't taken a position on that, but we see that these issues are all interconnected with the domestic health and public safety issues that we've decided to focus on. So we're diving into the details as we speak, and we have position papers, white papers, if you will, on the issues that we have decided to take on. And that is a topic that I'm going to pass along to our guy that's really done a great job on some of the white papers that are more environmentally oriented, and try to get some input from David Dolman about that. That's the man.
Yeah, I just feel that if your PAC reaches, I can't do everything, I understand, but at the same time, if it underscores these concerns to some degree, to a greater degree, I just think you would get more contributors. You know, you get more people believing in this cause, because I found myself my book was called Naked at the Mic, The Survival of a Liberal in a Time of Peril. I mean, talking about the last 15 years of conservative domination of the media. But what I'm trying to get at is that the liberals who were like us, like me, like Lila, and so many of our friends, have turned to be more libertarian in so many ways. Not libertarian to the extent of Rand Paul's or the Ron Paul's. Yeah.
Progressive libertarian, I suppose you could call it, maybe.
We just, the progressive thing has become so...
it's an overused.
It's not only is it overused, but it's overcooked, you know.
Right.
You know, a lot of the progressive policies that are out there Obama jumped on, and look what Obama did, okay? In fact, we still have a lot of idiots in this area, which used to be liberal, okay, is considered progressive, you know, which makes me laugh because they're still standing there like, oh, we still support Obama's wars, and they were totally anti-war, you know what I mean? And they used to be the environmental activists and this and that, but yet they're still standing there like, we love Obama, you know? And it's just scary that this big facade that he is. He's just a corporate shill, you know?
Yeah, and unfortunately. I think in the name of bipartisanship, he went too far in terms of trying to be everybody's friend, and the conservatives played him on that, and basically won
properly too. Unfortunately, yeah. I mean, because, but you know, his mask came off many years ago. You know, I mean, it came off right after his election in 2009. All right, all right, but when he took office, so it's like these things just are. I mean. You want to talk about him exposing himself? He just came out naked right away, and people have just been trying to put clothes back on him since, and it's not happening. I mean, he is—he's just been one huge disappointment, and to anybody that thought that he was, might preserve a constitution, or might, because he was a constitutional lawyer, or might have some kind of like help his own people, even for that matter, but he's not, you know. And I would hate to see another shill like this go into office as a Democrat, you know. And definitely, there's nobody in a Republican Party that would even consider, helping out the poor or helping out the middle class. But I mean, there is somebody there. I'm hoping, I'm thinking maybe Jim Webb might be a choice, you know, even though he's got a military background. He might be a stronger choice, or somebody like, but Warren, I don't think Warren, I mean, she still believes that she doesn't want to audit the Fed. She's still, she's, even though she's against all of these financial people, she's still a financial, she's still she's still a Democrat. A big money Democrat, you know, and she's still stroking the rich. So it's like, how do you get around that? How are you going to get around that for these candidates you're supporting? And
well, we're going to support worthy candidates from districts that the Democratic Party will not support because they think that they're not going to win, so they're not going to give them any money. So we want to, and so, you know, we think a little bit of money, relatively speaking, in those districts will go a long ways to help candidates who need help but who have been given up on by their own party, perhaps, or by other liberals or progressives.
Good, good, good. Yeah, I do.
Can you say who it is, or are you not ready
Now, I'm not ready to do that, Lila, but I do believe that there are many districts that we'll be looking at that fit that profile.
Great.
And that could make the difference if they get some money. That's what it takes to get elected.
Because the Democrats are big money. Just you're talking the same group. You're talking the same people. You know?
Yeah, and I'm talking about the National Party, which does, you know, they make these decisions that somebody can't win, and so they even charge them for the lists, you know, of the registered voters. So it's a fixed system. With the active participation of the Democratic Party in those districts, and so, you know, that they have ignored and that they've abandoned the good candidates in. So we're going to help those good candidates as much as we can.
Hey,
well, one of the things that the Democrats have done that Ralph Nader complained about, who's from this area out here, actually, from a couple of towns away originally, a couple of towns away from us, is that the Democrats were the most active in freezing out candidates from debates who were not Democrat or Republican. And even though he was a lawyer himself, he challenged that. And by the time it got heard, of course, the election was way over and nothing has changed. So that's...
Well, I think he makes a good point. I'm a registered independent, by the way. I'm not a Democrat and I'm not a Republican. I'm a registered independent.
Yeah. How is that, man?
But that's a difficulty when you come to debating. And
absolutely. It's an unfair advantage for the existing power structure. And I didn't think that was what this country was based on. I don't think there was a Democratic Party and a Republican Party in 1776.
Okay.
I don't remember that being written into the Constitution that they should have an advantage in debating.
No, it wasn't.
Well, they've managed to pass laws and tie up everything, so it's only their candidates that seem to be able to be brought before the public in any significant way.
I mean, what is your overall feeling about the state of the union and the future of this country within the next 10 years?
Very worried about it. I think our future is in doubt. I think that from top down the system is corrupt. You know, with money driven elections. I was one of the biggest opponents of the Citizens United decision when it came down. But my belief is that you don't abandon the playing field to the Koch billionaire class super PACs. You get on the playing field with them and you compete with them. You're not going to level the playing field, but you can get on the playing field, and that's what we have to do. We can't turn our backs on that and just go stick our head in the sand and say, well, you know, we don't want to play that game, you know. But you have to, because that's our Supreme Court has said it's legal. So we have to be on that playing field so that we don't just ignore the realities of the situation.
How much money are you going to need to affect the kind of change that you're talking about right now?
Well, you know, again, we're specializing in certain districts, and so we're not expecting to, like I said, we're not expecting to level the playing field with $800 million worth of war chest. What we're expecting to do is level the playing field in certain districts. So we're trying to do our part, and we'd like to have people get off of the sidelines and participate with us. What we're asking for is $500 for contribution from people that can afford to do that, and to ask a couple of other people they know, including their friends and relatives, to do the same and have those people each do that, and so on and so forth. And the networking at $500 a piece will take care of a lot of issues in terms of the amount of money raised, but it's still going to be, you know, at the most $100 million or so. And that's a lot of money. I mean, you know, that a lot can be done, a lot of good can be done with that money, but it's not the end of the this story in terms of correcting what's wrong with this country. It's just a start on that. And so we need other groups cooperating. We need to cooperate with other groups to make these things happen that need to be done to fix this country.
Well, you're certainly in a state that has a lot of money. And
no, absolutely. And you know, we're not we're not against, as a super PAC, we are eligible to receive unlimited donations, contributions from individuals, unions, and corporations. And, you know, we don't want to be dominated by a single contributor or just a few contributors. But at the same time, we realize there's some right thinking. You know, I say right thinking, that's kind of a cliche, but the people that are on our same page with respect to our philosophies and our platform, we'd like those people to come forward. Get off the sidelines and come forward.
A lot of wealthy people have beach real estate.
Absolutely, yeah. They do. Let me tell you, we've got a meeting coming. Can I mention that? The Santa Monica launch of our network, Monster Pack Network 2016, is coming up on Saturday, February 28th.
Good.
If it's okay, I'd like to tell the folks about, tell you two and your listeners about the fact we're having what we call Monster Pack Network 2016's launch celebration at Magicopolis in Santa Monica. It's really a fun place. It's a great place, run by some tremendous magicians, and we're going to be using their venue to have our fun celebration and launch of our Network 2016. And we're going to have food and drink and political speeches, but we're also going to get the full-on magic show from Magicopolis with the two acts, one with an intermission before the next one, and that's how we'll end the evening. So it'll be a really fun evening on February 28th on 4th Street in Santa Monica. You can go to our website and check it out. And we hope that some of your folks from up there might be tired of the snow and ice to come down to sunny Southern California while we still are without a nuclear accident, you know, and help us to change the way things are in this country and get off the sidelines and come in and help us.
Can people donate to your cause if they can't travel out there, and how would they do that?
They certainly can. They can go to our website at monstapac.com, and there's a couple ways to donate there. They can also join our network on the internet. We can, you know, we're looking for members of our network, and we want people to contribute $500 to join our network of members. And that's readily available on the internet for them to do that. We will be actively working with them to help them proceed to do that if they will just contact us through our website, monstapac.com, and go to our page. The page that is really the most pertinent for that particular use is the page that's called, it's under the Act Together group of pages, and it's called Become a Member. If you hover over Act Together on monstapac.com, you'll see Become a Member, and that's where you can become a member of our network. And we'd love you to do that, and to, you know, not only pay $500 towards a great political cause, but also to agree to bring a couple of other people to the table who are like-minded, who are either, you know, friends or relatives or acquaintances that you believe would also be interested in our platform, and for those people to do the same thing, bring a couple more people each, and by the time you go 2, 4, 8, 16, 32, 64 times 500, you're starting to talk about some serious money, and then it keeps going and with momentum. So, yeah, that's how we intend to. You know, again, at the risk of using a dated term, an overused term, that's more of a progressive and democratic way of doing super PAC business, and that's how we're going to grow, and that's how we are growing.
I think your idea is great, and I wish you so much success. I mean, all of your platform, I I'm interested in all those causes as well. And I think starting with the regulation of nuclear power and deciding what to do with the waste is very important. And I wish you so much success, and I hope folks donate, and I hope you get all the money you need and more.
Yeah, we
it's
do.
It's a worthy cause.
Yeah. We wish you the best of luck, David. And
thanks to both of you. I've enjoyed talking to you both, and I look forward to networking with some of your listeners and talking to you again sometime.
I hope so.
And the best of luck. Thanks for being with us tonight.
Good luck, David.
Thank you, Lila. Thank you, Leo. I've enjoyed it. Take care.
Good night.
That was Eisenstein. And from Monster Pack, that's not the Super Pack, actually. We thank him for being on. And go to monsterpack.com if you want to contribute. Thanks for listening.
Yeah, his big thing is nuclear waste, and then climate change.
Well, climate change, nuclear waste. But what I like is he's supporting candidates who don't have a chance financially with the Democratic Party.
They have a good platform and good ideas, and are friendly candidates to these causes, and that's who you want to have elected. So when they get down there to either the state legislature or the federal...
And they're not necessarily Democrats. They could be independents.
They might even be Republicans if they're, you know...
Like you said, if they make any sense, that's fine.
Yeah.
But right now I want to thank everybody for joining us and wish you the best. And please join us tomorrow night when we talk about union issues and go after some of these Scott Walker and all these other nightmares it's so frightening.
It really is.
Join us tomorrow when we talk about this and maybe make some sense out of it. And good night,
everybody. Folks, and thanks for being with us.
Yeah.